Welcome to A Distant Campfire, a show about life in and around the SEA at the intersection between the medieval and the modern.
Once again, on our way to a midnight performance of Henry V, correct?
That's right.
So what is the context for this excursion right now? This is still part of the Shakespeare Festival. We've gone to Macbeth. We've already seen that. We've seen the Madrigal Singers. We attended a Shakespeare conference today.
A recorder consort. So we're still neck deep in Shakespeare.
So now that we've seen the play from yesterday,
we have pretty high hopes for today, because they were able to do impressive things with Macbeth yesterday, technically, even though they were working bare stage. And I have to admit, I actually kind of disapprove of Shakespeare being produced bare stage, because that actually makes production infinitely more difficult. And, well, you can't argue that historically it was absolutely appropriate. We're not in the 15th century, and we have all sorts of wizardry that we can use. So simply refusing to have any sort of stage furniture, I don't know, it seems a little unnecessary, a little stubborn.
Do we know for certain that it was absolutely bare stage?
We know for certain that it wasn't. We know for certain that they carried on
possible
a table,
kinds,
a chair,
right?
Yeah.
Because in the play, within the play, Midsummer Night's Dream, they did in fact have, we specifically
talked
detail
about
the props that they have with them.
That's right. No, well, not no doubt, but very likely caricaturing another popular production of the time. That there is every likelihood that the play within a play in A Midsummer Night's Dream was making open fun, was a specific spoof of a contemporary play
about
Pyramus and Thisbe, very likely.
He was mocking them.
Yeah, right. So not only was, you know, it absolutely appropriate within the context of the play itself, but I think he was doing, an absolute outright parody of somebody else's production. Because the audience would love that.
And the players would love it too. So let's go back to something else you said. You said, we have all the modern wizardry available to us. Why do we shun it, right?
Yeah. And actually, I mean, I do understand the theater history there and how theater was getting more and more and more almost top-heavy with production value. So then we stripped the stage bare and, you know, we said, let's just see if we can do it without all that nonsense. And okay, all right. But now it just seems lazy.
Right. They do it because they can.
Right.
Well, and also there's a certain starkness about it. There's a certain hollow feeling, like this is theater at its purest form.
Yeah. And I think that, I don't know that I'm arguing at all about the purity of the effect or the starkness or how that strips the text bare and focuses the audience on it or any of those good things. Of course, absolutely. But it requires a very great deal, a very great deal of the actors. And unless they are unusually accomplished and breathtakingly well rehearsed, it ends up showing up their flaws.
So it's not doing them any favors.
That's right, so it's not doing them any favors.
It also sort of presupposes that theater is about the purest expression of the thespian. That,
right.
That theater is all about the actors. And that is actually not always the case. Theater is about communicating a story.
That's right.
Not necessarily about,
and using whatever tools that you have at hand to communicate that story. Yes, I agree. It doesn't always need to be a showcase for the acting. There are other things that, you know, I might be biased because technical theater is something that can be used very, very effectively to sell Shakespeare to an audience that perhaps isn't as familiar or as filled with love as the audience at an academic conference would be. But I mean, look at the Hollywood-made Shakespeare films.
Sure, right.
They employ all the Shakespearean wizardry, and they employ all the technical wizardry.
So, thinking about the play that we're about to see tonight, where they've specifically made a movie of this, know it, and it was a cast of dozens. No, it was a cast of hundreds. There were a lot of people to portray the battlefield in Henry V.
That's right. Even though he really didn't have, I mean, it wasn't a cast of thousands.
Right.
It wasn't the version with Olivier, where I think they had, you know, golden age Hollywood type numbers. It didn't need to be, but yeah, it was very detailed.
It was.
Its fight scenes, in its battle scene at the end.
Yes, exactly. The battle scenes where we were seeing everybody die, we were seeing the wave on wave of attacks, we were seeing the archers. So things that they would not be able to show on stage, could show through the magic of filmmaking and movies.
Right.
Last night we saw a play with a company of seven.
That's right.
What do we expect tonight? Can you do can you do Henry V with a company of seven?
Probably you can. Probably you can do it with a company of four, if you had to. There's specifically a theater out of the middle of the state somewhere that travels around to high schools and colleges and other small venues and performs. I think the cast is slightly larger, because I've looked at the program. I don't think it's seven again. I thought that Macbeth adapted itself well to the smaller cast, but I have to admit that I did miss the presence of Lady Macduff. I thought that was a scene that obviously we could do without. And obviously, I mean, it didn't really impair the performance, but I did miss it. I was like, where was... And of course, you couldn't do the Lady Macduff scene without a small crowd of children. Well, no, I suppose you could if you wanted to.
Well, they did the second party scene with two party goers, right?
That's right. That's right.
And it suffered for it.
Yes, it did. Yes, I agree. That was one where you wanted the stage to be slightly fuller. You wanted that sense of the crowd's shock at what was going on.
Right.
So there were moments at which you thought, we could use an extra actor or two here. We could use some walk-on people. Pick them out of the audience and say, you two, come on up here. But I think it'll be more like a cast of 12.
Okay.
So not a gigantic cast, but a slightly larger cast. And yes, Henry V is full of characters that come in and then leave again.
Right.
Henry, Lord Scroope of Massam.
You've got
one huge scene with this character, and then they've gone off into the ether.
I think there's a difference between, we were talking before about pure theater. I think there's a difference between an exercise in theatrics, an exercise in theater, and an exercise in storytelling. And those are not necessarily the same thing. So you can marvel at the powerful performance of an individual actor who can carry a program, a play. You can delight in the fact that, look, we've got all of these parts covered, and they're covered by the same actors, three and four deep, right?
Yeah, right.
King Duncan was, what, also?
The murderer.
The murderer.
Yes.
That was great.
Yes.
And it's always fun when you have, like, your little group, and they play all the parts. But that doesn't necessarily convey the story the best.
That's right. That's right.
In fact, those little flourishes sometimes take you out of the story.
That's right. Are distracting and call attention to themselves.
So there are these two different values that the director sort of has to make some choices between.
That's right.
So Henry V, let's see what kind of choices he makes there. And, okay, so let me say, when you go to a community theater, when you go to a community college, when you go to a college production of it, you have certain limitations.
Can have.
Right.
Usually, it depends.
At some point, there has to be a production where they aren't limited by the number of college students who signed up for that class. They're not limited by their budget. They're not limited by anything. They should have exactly what they want, and no more and no less.
Yeah.
Are we seeing such a program tonight?
I don't think so. I think that this is another small, semi-professional company.
Mm-hmm.
This is a company stripped for speed. So that I believe that these, again, it's a small, semi-professional core group, you know, who hire, you know, a couple extra here and there for a play or for a season, and they tour and they appear at this festival. In fact, like I said, I think both of these productions are going to be seen again next weekend.
Right.
At the next Shakespeare's birthday celebration.
What's the most important scene in Henry V?
Okay, so the easy answer is it depends on the director.
Yes, exactly. So what the director will choose tonight may be different from what we say right now.
That's right. But I'm looking at the opening scene where Henry is being persuaded. Obviously he's not being persuaded. He's already made up his mind. But there is the argument made, because that can be a tough scene to do. That can be a scene that it is long and tedious and talky. It can be a scene that, it feels very static. So that will be very interesting to see how they approach that. And I think, being, you know, that it's one of the very first scenes, sometimes even the very first scene, you want to see.
It'll set the tone.
That'll set the tone. That'll be, you'll see there what we're reaching for, what story it is we're telling.
Macbeth is a tragedy.
Yes.
But Henry V is a history, right?
Well, yeah.
But it's really an action-adventure movie.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
in the same way that Macbeth should be a horror movie.
Right. And yet Macbeth had certain historical elements to it, right?
Yes, right, yeah.
Why was history so fascinating to them? Shakespeare's audience is
right.
The them.
Yeah, Shakespeare's audience is the them. Almost any answer that I struggle for is reductionist. So I'll just throw a couple of things down on the table and you kind of sort through them, all right? A lot of history had happened really quickly.
Right.
So there's this, you may have heard of it, Renaissance thing going on, where we focus on this particular century in English history and say, everything changed. Now, I imagine just about any century you look at, you can say everything changed. But there certainly was a wave of waking and learning and shaking and hopping up and beginning to move in different directions that was crossing Europe and that washed up on the shores of England. And we go from one kind of England in 1498 to a very different kind of England in 1598. But I think also...
So there's a certain... we might look at it as patriotism.
Oh,
We might be fascinated with Thomas Jefferson and the American Revolution.
Yes.
And that sort of thing in the bicentennial.
We are. Look at the success of Hamilton, the Broadway musical.
Right.
We still love our history. If we don't have to be worried about if it gets to be kings and battles rather than ponderous economic cross currents.
Right, yes.
You know, and this is kings and battles. This is as easy as it comes. Right? Our greatest king winning the greatest battle in our history. Woohoo! You know?
Yeah.
Against the French. We gotta love that. And this is a big, powerful, fire-breathing, you know, steam-snorting dragon of a play that's like, how great is it to be English? So great. How could you not love that? That's easy to sell.
That's right.
If Shakespeare were writing today, he'd have written a play about vampires. Just because you give the people what they want.
And this is the tail end of a series, right?
Well, yeah. In a way, it's as simple as the Fast and the Furious. What are we up to now? 15?
Right.
Right? The
well, or Henry look at Jason Bourne.
Right, yeah. Right. Henry 4-1 and Henry 4-2.
Yes.
They did really well. Here's Henry V. And although he did the Henry VI plays first, it was slightly out of order, but still, it's like capitalizing on what was very successful at the time, yes. So I don't know if they were necessarily any more excited about history than we are. We see movies like this all the time. In a way, it's like Captain America.
Right.
The original one set during the Second World War.
So we don't look at... What was the Spielberg movie about the bridge?
Private Ryan.
Well, there was Saving Private Ryan. And we don't say, oh, that's a history. We say that was a war movie.
That's right. This is a war play.
This is a war movie.
This is a war movie. In the same way that was a war movie. Because, you know, you have historical characters and... But... taken with a certain audience-pleasing perspective. Right, someone desperately needs to rescue me. Throw me.
Yes.
One tiny shred of hope. Can you think of anybody whose costume actually fit? I don't want to look at the program and see who's taking credit for those costumes. There wasn't a single one on stage that wasn't bad and too small or too big in some egregious way. That silver dress. It looked like something she'd worn when she was 12. What did they do? You know, rubber with Vaseline to get her into it?
The dress was painted on.
Yes, it was dreadful. And an old-fashioned style, so she looked like a servant girl. No. She looked like a hooker.
Yeah. I was gonna say... She looked inappropriate.
Yes, she looked inappropriate in a huge way.
Too much cake.
Did nobody have a mirror backstage?
At first I thought she was trying to be naive, innocent, vulnerable. Right?
Yeah.
But it was just too far.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
There was a lot of kissing. Which, I don't know, I felt like at one point I realized they probably just got coupled.
Oh, if she weren't wearing that dress, it wouldn't have been so bad, the kissing. His Cinderella prince outfit.
What was that outfit?
Yes, right! Yes!
He did! He looked like the prince from Cinderella.
And it was too big! You know, he would have been a little bit gallant if he'd taken off that oversized jacket and given it to her to cover up her comparative nakedness.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
The irony.
No, there's no irony. It was awful.
Yeah. It was awful. from the very first moment that the priests came in wearing combat boots, having no idea what to do with the rosaries.
Yes. And the red guy, he was so speaking so fast, I couldn't understand him.
Oh, the Dauphin was the bottom of it all.
Oh, yes. Gosh. He also, right, the pants were painted on.
I didn't notice the pants, frankly, because...
Okay. His acting was so bad.
Yes.
He was wearing tights, and you're right. Cold read.
Yeah, a cold read. Gosh. Oh, and the King of France was so bad. Oh, the King of France.
Was it supposed to be a comedy?
No. I mean... No. He was part of a whole different play. You know, he wandered in from the next...
We were watching.
Yes, right. He had wandered in from the next theater over.
Yes.
Yes.
And thought that he was in a Peter Sellers movie. And those twisty set pieces.
Oh, I love this. The set. That's what I was going to say. The best part of the whole thing was the set. Not the faux newscast. No, that was awful too. Couldn't they get a light in front of his face instead of all behind his head?
That's right. And the animation behind his head kept stuttering.
Yes.
Did that bother anybody else?
It was bad. It was just plainly bad.
It was bad.
But okay, not that. So chorus, bad.
Yes.
Dauphin, bad. The King of France, bad.
The actress playing...
No, wait. The same girl that played... When she was the boy.
Yes.
She was good.
Yes.
When she was a boy.
Yep.
I don't even know.
You are wiser, Kim Hwa.
Nell was supposed to be at the end?
The queen.
Of France. Why wouldn't she change her costume?
Yes,
I know.
Right.
She did change her costume, I know, and yet it looked like that was Nell.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't it?
Yes. And not only did it look like it was Nell, it looked like her mother was teaching her naughty words in English. That's supposed to be her maid.
Her maid, right.
Right? That the cross-casting there was very bad.
Oh, yes.
Very bad indeed. And why did we keep having video from the first Iraq War?
Oh, yeah.
What were we saying about Agincourt?
I don't think... Yeah, they weren't saying anything. It was just incoherent babbling because... That's all they had. They said, it would be really cool if we just, like, projected a bunch of war scenes behind us.
And it would have if they'd been better chosen. And I felt so bad for that kid. They kept throwing him up on stage with nothing to help him.
Which kid?
The guy playing Henry.
Oh, Henry, right.
He was alone on stage all the flipping time, talking to us.
Yeah.
In a way that was, you know, you gotta go there and say inappropriate.
Well, it was a little bit intrusive. It's like a madman, and he's you know, talking directly to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you were like, "Don't talk to me. I'm not listening to you." You know, you couldn't enjoy the performance.
Right. He couldn't stay on stage. He had to come down and invade the audience.
Yes, right. And you were like, "Stay away." And the set kept pushing them forward. Right. At the final bow, they were like teetering on the front of the stage. You're like, back up. Yeah, they've got a nice deep stage.
Right.
In fact, you kind of wished in Macbeth that they were moved a little forward, right? But in this one, they were always playing within 5 inches of you. And you were like, can you step
right.
back?
I was worried that Henry was just going to fall right off the front.
That's right, yes.
I had to keep looking down at his feet.
And he, everybody, kept talking to us. When there was somebody on stage they were supposed to be talking to.
He wanted to include us as his army, right?
But even before then, the priests that were supposed to be quietly colluding together were talking to us. And we were like, you know what? If you're asking my opinion, I think you're actually wrong. That Salic law, it does apply. You know?
Incorporate that into your play.
That's right. Exactly. Or don't ask me my opinion, you know? Was this opening night for them? Because they had their fan club that was cheering and laughing and pretending things that were really bad were quite good and that things that weren't funny at all were funny. How long did he hold that tennis ball? You kept wanting him to bounce it. Or to throw it.
I knew he would throw it in the end. I knew he would.
You were just waiting.
I was waiting for the guy to drop it and it come bouncing out into the audience.
That's right. And you know what? That would have been a great effect if it knocked the, if it had been, the cask had been sitting on a table and somebody knocked it over and the balls all came bouncing out into the audience. That would have been the best moment.
Okay. Let's just say, what about the Latino descent? So I thought he was actually trying.
The who?
The priest, the very talkative one.
Okay.
With the curly black hair.
Yes.
Yes.
I thought he was very emotive, and I liked him in a way.
I liked him too, actually.
I did not like the blonde guy.
No.
He
Pistol.
Yes.
And whatever else he wants, yeah.
He kept doing a English accent, sort of, some of the time.
No, he was a little bit of a black hole on stage.
Yeah.
He sucked all the light off the stage.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Whereas the other two, they were fun.
Like I said, I wish there wasn't the blonde kid, because you got the curly hair and then the Asian guy. They were a great pair.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to admit, though, the dialogue was just spoken too fast and I couldn't understand.
Why was the dolphin part of the cast?
Exactly.
I mean,
if you're gonna cut somebody,
if you had the choice between having that guy in the play and having that play without that guy, the play would be improved without that guy.
Yes.
Just don't have the dolphin at all.
Yes, right. We don't need him.
I would have rather had the blonde curly guy as the dolphin. And
yes, given him something black holy to do.
Right. So was he somebody's boyfriend?
Was there a director of this thing, or were all they're gonna get hit?
It was a student director.
It was. I thought it was Exeter. Exeter was the director. Yeah.
No, the one whose suit didn't fit. Yeah,
the guy with the bad suit.
Yeah, I mean, although when you say the guy with the bad suit, that was everybody. Okay. Takeaway from this play: if your clothes don't fit, you look like a putz. And oh, hey. There's such a thing as an iron. Iron your flippin' clothes.
Okay.
They were wearing these suit jackets, and then they had these grungy pants on. Was that a statement? And while I'm in a grumpy mood,
yes.
Let's just say that could they not afford a stage crew?
No, it was just them.
Because it's actually not hard to get a stage crew.
No, right. It's true.
To turn the set for you. King Harry coming out on stage and removing the chairs. That was bad.
Yes. Yes, it was bad. There was a lot of bad there throughout. There were some interesting ideas that were just poorly, poorly executed.
Yes, yeah.
This is the badness that we object to.
That's right. Exactly. Well, and once again, the whole bare stage thing. If they had had an interesting set with maybe some levels so that they could stand up and sit down and move upstairs and downstairs, you know, if they'd had tech at all besides the terrible press conference video thing, you know, it would have given them something to do besides standing in a semicircle all the time.
Either that or striding around the stage like Henry did, up and down, up and down, yeah. I will lead them up and down. And then the dolphin, never at rest, constantly circling around the constable.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Which was fine because we certainly couldn't understand a word he was saying. I think they made him move because they knew he was so bad at reading.
Yeah, and if Exeter was the director, then he should have known that the way he blocked that scene, it looked like Exeter was scared of the Dauphin. The Dauphin won that scene. And that's the scene where the Dauphin is supposed to be acting like a child, and Exeter is supposed to be acting like a soldier, maybe? Exeter is supposed to dominate that scene. Instead of which, he stood intimidated off to one side while the Dauphin strode up and down. And looked for a second like King Henry. I just...
Yes. So you're saying the director blocked that wrong?
Yes. If it was blocked at all, if he didn't just sort of let everybody move the way they thought they should.
You know, I got the impression that, like, everybody, like, brought their suit from home.
Yes. Yeah.
The only interesting thing was the flight line coveralls that they were
yes,
wearing.
Yes, right.
That was
yeah.
good.
Yeah, it was. It was good. That was a good idea. Somebody found those in the Army Navy surplus over here and said, okay, this is going to work for us. Are they right?
And I swear, Henry was reading his lines off that manila folder he had.
Yes, yeah, he was.
He did not remember the French names he was supposed to read.
No.
That's bad. He can't remember his lines.
A lot of people messed up Act 5. A lot of people. Yeah. It was like they started rehearsal with Act 1, and when Act 1 was done, they rehearsed Act 2, and they opened when they'd only had a couple rehearsals of Act 5.
Right.
That's what it looked like. And that's such a rookie move that sometimes you start rehearsing with Act 5 just so it doesn't look bad, because that's what the audience is going to walk away with. You know?
A golden Act 5 would not have saved that play.
No, it's true.
But yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. They were just wandering around the stage, and they had no idea what story they were wrapping up.
No.
And there was just a lot of kissing. And it was supposed to, you know, cover it all, I guess.
And it was badly cut. The audience was left hanging there, saying, is it over?
Yes.
Is it done? Was that it? Oh, okay. Oh. And if they hadn't all come out and looked at us meaningfully, we would not have started to applaud.
Right. And to have Henry lead the curtain call?
Yes, right.
That was weird.
That was weird.
I thought the play was still going on.
Yeah, that they were coming out to say one last thing.
Yes.
They'd never rehearsed the curtain call. That's what that said to me.
Yeah.
We had no idea how to do a curtain call, except that we'd been in plays before.
I'm telling you, they brought their own suits.
Yeah, I know. Well, or at least they all brought their own pants. If somebody went out to a thrift store and picked up some secondhand jackets,
okay.
Everybody was wearing their own pants.
Yeah.
And if they, like, I'm sure that the Dauphin throughout was wearing his own clothes. That was just his stuff.
There were a number of larger gentlemen in the cast.
Yes, there were.
And
not a single...
None of their clothes fit. They all looked bad.
Well, even the smaller ones, you know? So either the clothes were hugely baggy.
Yeah.
Or they were a little snug.
Yes, right. All right. Is that the worst we can come up with?
They didn't have a story they were telling. They didn't know what story they were telling.
That's what I felt at the end. I don't know if that was fair to say or not, but I felt at the end they didn't really know what story they were telling.
They didn't know if Harry was a gallant guy or a putz who smacks his girlfriend on the bottom as he walks off stage.
Was that a little too loud?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, right. That was the crowning ignominy of the whole film.
Yes.
It just made... In case you were ever doubting whether there was an earnest portrayal here, oh no, there was not.
That's right.
And the constable was the only actress that didn't get to kiss everybody.
Yes, right. And...
Yes.
Well, it was very interesting that before she was the constable, she was one of the traitors. And
right.
Specifically the one who was Harry's best friend.
Yeah.
And given that they cast a girl as Harry's best friend described in a line they did not cut
yes.
as his bedfellow.
Yes,
right? There, we could have gone with that and said girlfriend, right?
Right. We didn't have to pretend that she was really a boy. No.
Uh-uh.
She could simply have been a girl.
That's right.
And bedfellow.
Yes, and bedfellow. And then she could have got to kiss him, maybe, once.
Yes, it's an option there.
Right.
No, that would have been great.
Yeah.
Right before he betrayed them, he revealed the betrayal.
That's right.
He could have given her a lingering kiss.
That's right.
Why was she wearing that blue blazer? She should have been wearing a dress.
Yes, right. Yes. And she was unfortunately costumed throughout. None of her clothes fit.
Yeah.
Well, nobody's clothes fit. But that was really too bad. Because she was trying desperately to bring a little dignity to the proceedings.
Do you remember Total Recall?
Which one? The first one or the second?
Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
First one.
I do.
And near the end of the show, Schwarzenegger's inside. They're trying to convince him that he's back at Total Recall office. And there's a psychologist that comes in and talks to him.
Yes.
And he ends up blowing the guy away.
Yes.
But in the meantime, he's just kind of this officious prig.
Yes.
That was the Herald.
Yes. Yes.
That was his inspiration. There are so many characters that have great and noble hearts to them.
That's right.
That we did not find.
No. In fact, not a single character portrayed on stage had either a great or a noble heart. Yes, the Herald, the Constable.
Well, you mentioning the Constable, that was the only thing that I could think of. She was probably the best one.
Yeah. But even she wasn't allowed to have the dignity and the presence and the honor that is written into her lines.
You know, and I didn't like the choice of putting her great speech on the video.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Why couldn't we bring her right down to the front?
That's right. And there is only one answer for that. You ready for this?
I am.
She didn't want to memorize it.
You think she was reading it?
Yeah. I think everybody who did video was reading.
Really?
I know. So disappointing. You know, putting the Herald on video. And afterwards, Henry's whole speech is addressed to the Herald. And there's no Herald on stage.
No, there, right?
Very rarely in the play was anybody actually talking to the person they were talking to. But that was just egregious.
His name was Montjoy.
Yep.
I don't think they ever mentioned his name. They just cut it out?
Yes.
They cut out those lines.
Yep.
We're outraged. Outraged.
So horrible. So was it the King of France being the guy on the video? Was that actor? Okay.
Yeah,
so maybe that's why. Maybe they wanted him to lean into the shadow so that you couldn't see him.
Trying to disguise him?
Yes. Oh, man. The helmet. It was stupid. Only one time on stage does anybody wear a helmet, and it's in that scene. If we'd had helmets throughout, or anything really resembling coherent uniforms throughout.
No, Harry's costume was inscrutable the entire way through.
That's right.
Change after change made no sense.
Yes.
Was he some kind of Spanish general there at the end?
Yes, right. No, I'm telling you, he's a prince from Cinderella.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And putting the surrender of Harfleur like a press conference. The desperation of his great speech there. He just came across as a bully.
Okay. So you step back. You look at this and you say, this was a failure of the director.
Yes, this was a failure of the director.
He didn't know how to achieve what he wanted to. Even if he had any vision at all, he didn't know how to achieve it.
That's right.
I think that you're right that it was also a failure of preparation. It was poorly rehearsed.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, maybe you can begin to forgive King Charles for turning into a clown.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Maybe that was his only refuge.
Yeah. I don't know.
Right now.
Yeah.
We've disgorged all the
venom?
Venom. I was going to say bile, but that we possibly can.
Okay.
Now. An And nevertheless, we went to see this Shakespeare play.
Yes, we did. And we still need ice cream.
And we paid good money to see it.
We did. Good money.
So, is there value in a production like that?
Yes. Yes, there is.
The more you see Shakespeare's body of work, the more you become familiar with it, the more you become accustomed to it, the better you know it. And you can't know it from hearing the same performance over and over and over again. You can't watch Kenneth Branagh's show 10 times and think you know it.
Right. But also, it was a great experience for them.
Sure,
I mean, it was. They thought they were doing a great job, and they had a very friendly audience tonight. So they were affirmed in that belief.
I think this was their second night.
Oh, was it? Okay.
No, not that they did have a very friendly audience. I think the first night was dead, completely dead.
Okay.
And they went back to their friends and wives and said, look, it was completely dead. You need to show up and you need to have a good time. Because the audience didn't know how to react to this.
Okay. All right.
And so they did. They came and they rescued them and they gave them a good performance.
And that's a very incalculably good experience for all those student actors to have wrestled with this and come out feeling triumphant, to
yes.
feel like they've done some acting, right? You could tell that each one of them, while making bad choices, felt like they were getting something out of the essence of the character.
Are you free from sin, Dad?
No.
Ready to meet your Lord?
Where is this going?
Because that sounded like a threat.
Yes. It sounded like he was going to shoot me in the back of the head.
Right. Oh.
It's like that fortune cookie. Enjoy life while you
can. Yes, right.
That's why you still can.
Enjoy life while you still can. The threatening cookie. Okay, all right. So, roses. What was good? I can start.
Okay.
There was a lot of potential in those triangular set pieces.
Yes.
And they were on wheels, and they could have, I don't know why, their default color was white. I think that was a mistake. And the cardboard wainscoting was also not fun.
It could have been better done, yes.
But the idea there was great. Notice that they just excised the scene outside of Harfleur with all the different accents, the Irishman and the Scotsman
yes,
and the Welshman.
Yes.
And
that's right.
But even the scene with the rude mechanicals, as it were, outside Harfleur, if they had pushed those together and created a sort of a bunker-like shape, there were four of them.
Mm-hmm,
they could have created a small, intimate playing space with the idea that they're here out of the rush and fuss of the battle. There were several scenes where they could have created a slightly more intimate or slightly more interesting playing space.
In the right hands, with the right director and the right stage crew,
yes,
they could have turned this into a kabuki theater, a Japanese, you know, display
yes.
where everything was tightly choreographed, and
yeah.
everything moved, and you could see the shapes change in front of you, and
yes.
the stage take its shape.
That's right. That's right.
But we didn't have a chance to do that, and you know, so it ruins the effect when you have this one spinning 3/4 of the way around like a mad top.
Yeah.
Because the guy didn't know where to go.
That's right.
And you were living in deathly fear that 3 of them would be white and 1 of them would be brick.
Yes.
And just go on like that.
That's right.
But, and so, there was the potential, though, if they had stagehands who had rehearsed.
Yes.
And were managing the stage. I thought the stage itself was brilliantly dressed. I liked the banners that shifted from
the French back and forth.
See, that seemed to me cheap.
No.
Okay, all right.
If
okay.
it had worked well, if it would fit it together, it would have been good.
And yeah, if it had been maybe a little better made, they were a little patty. So maybe that got in amongst me. But think about that, the scene between Henry and Kate, where he kept walking toward her and then turning his back on her and walking away saying, "I do love you." And you're like, then why are you walking away?
Why are you walking away? He kept doing that. That was annoying. But I know we've spewed our vial, but at the same time, I would say.
But imagine if they had one of those triangular pieces that she could sort of dodge behind and he could chase her around in a, dignified sort of way. But,
we were supposed to be annoyed at her, but I kept being annoyed at him for walking away. He would work himself up, and then he would get all frustrated and take these huge, great strides away from her. They needed to start maybe at different levels and at different corners of the stage and slowly work their way together so at the end they were in each other's arms in an intimate setting.
That's right.
We kept consummating the relationship and blowing it apart.
That's right. And she needed to decide what Catherine wanted. Because for someone who was covering her mouth and giggling shyly right from the very beginning, her lines didn't go with her behavior at all. But we were talking about good things.
Good things.
And so a good thing here was
the set.
The set had a great deal of potential. They didn't use it as well as they could have, but it had a great deal of potential. Whoever designed it was a really good idea.